Welcome, Voltron fans. A lot of you have really been waiting patiently for this podcast. We'll have an interview with story editor Tim Hedrick and staff writer Mitch Iverson from Voltron Legendary Defender, the hit show on Netflix, and now the hit comic series at comic book shops now. Before we bring Tim and Mitch on, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Greg Tyler.
Hello, fellow Voltron fans. It's great to be here as always, and I am excited to speak with Tim and Mitch. This is cool.
Well, Voltron fans really love this show, and a big reason is how well-written the characters are and the really big universe this story encompasses.
Well, yeah, I agree. What do you think of the comic book, by the way?
I love it. I mean, we've already had two issues, right? And yeah. That first issue really sets it up for the second one, you know, perfectly. You know, they get to the end of that first issue and they realize that maybe they did something they shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
Whoops.
And then, as they had told us in the previews and before the comic series came, each of these subsequent issues is going to focus on a individual pilot. So this second issue was very Hunk-centered.
Right.
Because, you know, Hunk does some real cooking here.
He does indeed. He does know how to cook.
And his cooking helps them win the day.
Yeah. So we probably shouldn't spoil it any further. But yeah, it is very Hunk-centric, and it's just a great ride, both issues.
And it looks like to me that number three is going to center on Lance. Doesn't that seem like that?
Yeah. And I got to tell you, I'm just flipping through the second issue right now, and there's a two-page spread where, you know, they really cut to the chase and have the Lions form Voltron. There's a two-page spread where there's this kind of a space tunnel effect, and you see the Lions in the background sort of fading out, and then there's Voltron in the foreground. You know, it basically indicates that they've formed Voltron, and that two-page spread is just awesome. The artwork throughout is great in both issues, but that particular image is striking. I love it.
Yeah, so I want to get these guys on so we can talk about the comic book and the show, and there's a lot of fan questions. And we only have 30 minutes with these guys, so I have to make sure that we get all the fan questions in that we can before they have to go.
Okay? Okay. Let's do it.
All right. These guys are really busy with Season 2 and the comic book miniseries, so we are really thankful they are with us today. Give a warm Let's Voltron welcome to Tim Hedrick and Mitch Iverson. Welcome, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us on. We're very excited to talk about Voltron.
That's right. We are extremely excited to be on this podcast.
Hello, Let's Voltron podcast. This is Tim Hedrick, the head writer of Voltron.
And this is Mitch Iverson. I'm a writer on the show and a writer for the comic book.
Awesome. The way we're going to do this is we've got a lot of fan questions, and we want to get right to those because they are the reason that we're here. They are the reason that Voltron is as successful as they are. So we want to get to those fan questions as soon as possible.
All right. Do it.
Okay. The first question is from Neptune. It says, "Thank you guys for breathing life into Voltron again. I was a diehard fan of all the previous Voltron incarnations, so it's good to see that this one is in such talented hands. Also, thank you for 'We were meant to think you were a boy' line from Karan. That was brilliant. We've seen some really cool character dynamics emerge on Voltron Legendary Defender that weren't in the original show, like Shiro and Pidge, Lance and Keith, Hunk and everyone. Is there any chance we long-suffering fans of Keith and Allura will see them interact more in future seasons?"
Yes. Thank you, Neptune. Yeah, we absolutely will see Keith and Allura interact more, and I don't want to spoil anything, but yeah, they will definitely have strong and emotional interactions coming up. Also, for the "We were meant to think you were a boy" line, that was by writer May Chan, so shout out to May Chan on that joke.
All right. Thank you, May. The next question is from Shambhavi Kadam. "Can you tell us a little bit about your writing process for the show? I know some series like Star Trek have a Bible of planned character story arcs. Do you do something similar for Voltron? And does the fan reaction influence the direction of these planned stories?
We do have a Bible for Voltron. It's a Bible that I came up with Joaquim and Lauren before the show was in production. So it didn't really have that many storylines that were guiding it. It was more kind of about all the characters and the worlds and what, you know, the new Voltron design would be and the ships and stuff like that. And it was used to kind of present to the people at the network. And our writing process is, we start out a season with kind of like a general guideline of where we want to go. So we kind of know where this adventure is going to take us and what, in general, the arcs of our characters are. But we have a pretty aggressive schedule here with a pretty quick turnaround. So we end up doing a lot on the fly throughout the season and working on every single episode right up until the moment where it ships out. But basically, every episode starts with a premise, which is about a page or two pages that are the idea of the episode. And that goes out to everyone on the show for notes, and then we take those notes and then we develop that into an outline. When we do that, we put 3x5 cards up on a cork board and we lay out the whole episode and we say these are the beats that are going to happen and here's the character beats that we want to hit, and that gets turned into an outline. It's usually about 8 or 9 pages, and then that goes out for notes from everyone. We take the feedback from the executives and Joaquim and Lauren. Then we turn that into an episode. And usually our scripts are like 23, 24 pages long. And then that goes out again. More notes, notes incorporated, another script, more notes, and then notes and notes and notes and notes. And eventually it becomes a show somehow involving robots and Koreans, I think.
I'd just like to add that the part he was saying with the note cards, we call that the pitch out. And in my opinion, that's like the most fun part of the show, because the whole writing team is in there and you break the episode. And it's just really exciting because you get to see all these really wonderfully creative people have their input. And like, you know, somebody might pitch a joke that just stays in the entire time. And it's just really exciting to be a part of.
I should say that Mitch started the show as the writer's assistant and kind of worked his way up onto the staff here. So this is his first show he's ever worked on. He's really coming to his own as a Voltron writer.
He says worked my way up, but it feels more like I clawed my way up.
Fought his way.
Well, if I may ask, how did you get to be an assistant on the show?
I was friends with Tim for a while. He had read some things I had written. I don't know if he thought they were good, but he thought, this guy seems eager to get coffee.
Yeah, he makes a mean cup of joe. I wouldn't necessarily say friends, but, you know, we've developed a relationship. Now, Mitch is great, and he was... I kind of met Mitch. He was a fan of Avatar and Korra before, and so he was talking about that and sent me some stuff to read, and it was good. And so when we had the opportunity to bring him on, I said, how's your typing? And he said, fast, which was a lie, but it got him in the door.
Okay, so Mitch, this has to be a little bit overwhelming then, that such a big show on your very first try, you know, going into the writing field here. How does it feel?
Like you said, it's overwhelming. It's really exciting. You know, you just try and take it one day at a time. But with a team like this one, it's a lot easier to handle because they've been here before. They know how to act, and they tell me when and what to do. It's really nice.
As you've worked on this comic, you are the two credited writers in the comic as opposed to the larger writing staff for the show. Was the collaborative feel significantly different, just having two people versus the entire show staff? And what experience was that like for you?
It felt similar but different. It was a lot faster. There wasn't as many chains of notes processed through it, so it was really fun to work with Tim. Tim is a genius, so...
Shucks.
Seriously, though, the guy has always just like got lightning in a bottle. And so, you know, we will bounce ideas off each other and stuff like that, and Tim has this propensity to just like snap his fingers and say, what if we did this? And then everyone in the room is like, oh, okay, that's what we're doing. That's awesome. And we kind of worked back and forth on the comic like that. And then, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but we take turns writing issues, but we broke the overall story together.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't see me sliding Mitch a $100 bill right now. Yeah, this was really fun. You know, I hadn't really done... that much. I'd written some comics for the avatar for like Nick Magazine, and Mitch hadn't either. So one of the questions that we got sent in was about how do you break into comics? And our answer was get staffed on a show and have someone sign you a comic book. Any other way to do it. Yeah, it's really fun because, yeah, it happens so much faster. You know, part of the last question that we kind of blew off was like, do you react to fan comments? And the answer is no, because usually by the time fans see it, we're so far ahead. Like the writing happens 9 months before the, you know, a finished episode goes out. So there's really no, they're not that much interaction. But with the comics, you know, they're coming out, you know, like just months later, which is amazing. And also there's a real freedom to just, you know, kind of do whatever. There's no production hassles you have to worry about, or like, do we have this in the budget or whatever? You can just do whatever you want. So it's been really fun.
Yeah, the whole production process takes a lot longer. So you couldn't be like South Park where they could, you know, have something that just happened this week and then their show's on in 2 weeks.
Exactly, yeah.
We love big giant monsters, but they're very expensive to create. So we have to be judicious in how we use them in the show. But in a comic book, man,
yeah,
you can have monsters all the time.
Yeah, serve them up fast and fresh.
So, all right, I got to get back to these fan questions, and I apologize to some of these fans because we're not going to get to some of your questions because we have very limited time with Tim and Mitch. So let's get to Casey Snyder. What was your favorite thing to write for, either the comic or on the show?
This next comic that's going to come out, the third comic, is the Lance comic, and I wrote that one, and I was really, really happy with that, the way that came out. I think it's really funny. I think Lance is usually my favorite character to write for, and so I am excited for people to read that. I will also say that in this run of comics, the last issue is based on a storyline that our other writer, Josh Hamilton, who didn't work on the comics, but this is an idea that he's had seriously on a 3x5 card on our board since the show began.
Seriously.
So we did incorporate that into the comics. So I think that is that was fun to finally get that one out.
And was it also his idea to start it after Rebirth?
No, we had to kind of find a spot in the order of the shows where it was conceivable that there would be enough time for a little adventure to happen, where we could put something that wouldn't influence the flow, because we found out about the comics well after the shows were written. So that was kind of the only space we could find, or the best space we could find to have it.
Let me go to the next question. Danny DeWald asks, are we going to get background stories of the Paladins? We already know of Pidge's family. How about the others?
Yes. The answer is yes. Keep watching.
Okay.
No spoilers.
All right. From Popo. In episode 2, we see Lance wearing blue lion slippers. Are those complimentary? Where did he get them?
I think the better question is, where can I get them?
Yeah, hopefully there will be some DreamWorks marketing people who are listening to this and putting those slippers out, because they've been a big hit. But yeah, I think they come with the lions. So you get them when you're a paladin. You get slippers.
So that means Zarkon has black lion slippers then, right?
You know, hopefully we'll be able to highlight that in a future episode.
Okay. All right. Fawn asks, I have the same question. Where did Lance get his blue lion slippers from? So there's several people interested in those slippers, just so you know.
Hot item. I would like to get, I'd like a whole Voltron set that includes the slippers, one of each color, and then like oven mitts, so that you could actually dress up like Voltron.
And cook.
Yeah, and cook, right.
That'd be great. All right, Quindigo asks, will we find more about Shiro's family?
Yes.
Okay. And Mullet McGee asks, will we get more of a backstory about Keith, Hunk, or Lance's experience as Garrison students?
Yeah, we'll see a little bit more of the Garrison. I saw we had a lot of questions about the Garrison. People love that Garrison.
They do.
So, yeah, I think that we'll get back there somehow, some way.
Okay, speaking of the Garrison, Foss Penumbra asks, what kind of institution is the Garrison? Is it a college, university, military, or something else?
Yes, it's all of that. It's kind of this futuristic NASA-like institution that also trains the upcoming astronauts. So we see, you know, kind of the school aspect of that with our young paladins. But then when Shiro crashes, you know, we see all those response vehicles that go out after that. That's kind of like the more military aspect. Mm-hmm. So they arrange all of the space travel, but also train up the new recruits.
Okay. Lance asks, in number two, when Lance tried to use his Bayard inside his line, it didn't work, and Pidge said he's not ready yet. Does this mean something needs to specifically happen for it to work, or is it just because you're saving it for down the road, and they need more Lance information desperately?
It could be both.
Yeah, one or the other. But yeah, we will see. We'll see Lance progress in that area. So, yeah, again.
And also, you want to see that happen in the show, don't you?
Right.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we see, you know, these guys learn how to use their lions a little bit more all the time, and it's kind of a personal journey for each of them.
That was also to kind of answer a question of, like, why aren't the other paladins just plugging in their Bayards all the time?
It's a good question.
Yeah. They're learning how to use these lions, and they require a bond.
Right.
How do you guys come up with all the nifty alien words that Karan in particular uses all the time? How do you come up with that stuff?
You know, I've gone to a method where I just kind of mash buttons on the keyboard and see what comes out. See what sounds funny.
Nice.
It's more of an art than a science, I would say.
Well, in the comics, you guys go absolutely crazy with the names of all these things. Carthulian System, Yandalian, Nalufar, Grisian Sir.
Wow, your pronunciation is impeccable. Do you speak Althean?
Labyrinthine Caves of Talwar, the Fripping Bulgogian.
That's my favorite.
Bulgogian is a good one.
I mean, you guys, you must be able to go at greater lengths on these names because it will never be voiced. Is that the truth with that kind of thing in the comics?
It does bring up a nice anecdote about how poor Rhys Darby gets thrown some of the craziest words.
Yeah.
And he's always like, how do we pronounce them? And it's like, you're the only one that's going to say it, so you tell us.
Yeah, however you say it, that's how it goes.
Yeah. Seamus Kelly asks, what goes into the world building for a show with such a big universe like Voltron?
Well, you know, Voltron comes with a lot of its own universe. You know, it's got a long history, so there's a lot of that you can always kind of pull from. Mm-hmm. We try to, you know, read and watch the cosmos and, you know, pull out some pseudoscience that we can bake in.
The nice part about having a writer's room is that there you get all these different perspectives. Like, you know, Josh Hamilton is a big history buff, so he can, like, pull examples out of history that might be meaningful to him. I watch a lot of, like, really bad sci-fi stuff, so I just get inspiration from that sometimes.
Is that, like, Sci-Fi Channel bad stuff? Is that what you're talking about?
Be specific after saying bad.
Plan 9 from Outer Space?
Oh, that's a classic.
Yes, it is.
If we had some spaceships with little wires coming across the screen, that'd be pretty good. Maybe we should do that at some point. Yeah, I mean, we just kind of sit in here and just think, what would be cool to see? I mean, that's the bottom line, is, like, it's got to be entertaining. So, you know, whatever kind of makes us laugh or, you know, seems like it would be awesome to see, we just throw it in there.
Okay, Leah asks, what's it like working as a writer on a TV series? I would like to be a writer someday.
Maybe, Mitch, you can field this. You're a writer on a TV series.
Well, my boss is sitting right next to me, so let me just say it's fantastic.
Good answer.
No, it's really cool. It's challenging. There's this kind of interesting pressure that comes with having to be creative every day and having to do it on a time frame that's so rewarding when you succeed in doing it. And you have to work with a team. That's something that I don't think a lot of people appreciate about television writing, is that you're part of a whole team, you're part of a whole system. You have to be able to communicate with others well, you have to be able to get along with them. And that's not something that people usually equate with writing. It seems like such a solitary endeavor.
I think that the main thing I would say to people about writing a TV, becoming a professional writer on a TV series that most people don't think about, is just like the volume that you have to come up with. And most writers, when they start out, have one idea that they're super passionate about and, like, this is going to be great. And it's like, okay, that's one now come up with 99 more, you know, and that's, mm-hmm. that's what the job is.
Yeah.
So it's really, it's a numbers game. You just have to be able to kind of pound it out. And when you're not inspired, you know, then it's like, what do you have now? You know? So you, it's a lot of like learning the craft and being able to, you know, write a script that you don't necessarily feel all that passionate about and make it good and make mm-hmm. it work for the characters and make it work for the show, you know?
A trick somebody told me one time that I use, and this is just something that helps me out, is if you ever get stuck on a problem, just write down 10 ideas. And you nine of them will be bad, but one of them might not be bad. And that's really where perspiration comes to get inspiration, I think.
Okay. EZ asks, each lion has a personality trait it's associated with to help the team. What is the blue lions? Because when Alora had started talking about the blue lion with Lance, Lance sort of interrupted her, and we never got to find out what that true personality trait was of the blue lion.
Well, it requires the most handsomest slash best pilot of the bunch.
Yeah, Lance had it right. Yeah.
Okay.
He's already Paladin then. Do it again.
Yeah, or at least it needs a pilot that thinks he's the most handsome slash best pilot of the bunch.
That's right. I think that the blue lion is, it seems to be the lion that I most associate with, like, holding the team together. There's something about yeah. teamwork with the blue lion, like, mm-hmm. and about providing, you know, what's needed at the time, mm-hmm. you know, and being flexible, and, you know, which I think is kind of a little bit of the water element of the mm-hmm. blue lion.
Ties into being a leg, too, you know? Legs are all about support.
Right.
Okay.
We get a kick out of legs, and it shows.
There you go.
Okay, Amy asks, will we learn more about the previous paladins, and how much does Alora know about them?
She knows about them, and yes, we will learn more about them. So that's coming up.
Cool. All right, Mullet asks, how would you describe Shiro's relationship with the Holt family?
He's a friend of the family and, you know, goes over for dinner sometimes mm-hmm. and hangs out. He's a big admirer of Sam and friend of Matt, and yeah, he knows them all.
Okay, and specifically Matt asks, why does Matt only wear glasses in some scenes? Isn't it hard to be an astronaut with things like that?
We will find out about Matt and his glasses in a future episode.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Good question.
Awesome. Okay, Neat asks, in interviews it's been said that Lance is insecure and his ego is a cover-up. Will those insecurities be explored in future episodes?
Yes, they will, in an episode written by me, so just stay tuned in the next drop.
Yep.
Cool.
I think there's some good Lance insecurities in issue 3 of the comics as well.
So. Oh, yes. Awesome. That, I can't wait for people to read that, because when I read the first draft that Tim turned in, I was just laughing out loud. It was so great.
I got to tell you, I'm really enjoying this comic. I mean, it is so in sync with the show in terms of tone and writing style, and the artwork is phenomenal. It's a great read.
Yeah, it's been really fun to see the art come back, and Lion Forge has been really, really fun to work with. Totally. So, yeah, that's been a joy.
Seriously.
Okay, Cubby asks, with creators and writers from the United States, anime from Korea at Studio Mir, comics artists from Digital Art Chefs from the Philippines, how does it differ coordinating between those countries to produce consistency in the Voltron Legendary Defender universe?
Are you talking about in terms of like art or story?
I think they're just trying to figure out how do you keep the stories consistent across all those different places geographically, you know, around the world, and at the same time within the Voltron universe.
People from the show go over to Studio Mir in Korea, which is the studio that makes the show, pretty regularly, about quarterly. Joaquin will go over there with some of the artists and our line producer. And so they're in constant communication, and they have, you know, they Skype with them every week whenever we come up with a script. They have a meeting where they go through the whole thing and they explain what they want. And so it's pretty constant communication. In terms of working with the digital art chefs, that's been handled all through Lion Forge, so it's really been easy for us. We haven't had to mm-hmm. really do anything for that.
Okay.
You have to be careful with language. There's mm-hmm. some idiomatic things. What was the one that you had mentioned?
One time, I think somebody wrote in a script that somebody stared daggers at somebody else and came back drawn that way with literal daggers being stared at somebody.
Yeah, so some things don't translate correctly. So you have to be careful with that.
I think also Digital Art Chefs, they're doing a great job, and they were also allowed to get a lot of reference material from our studio too. So it's really, really helpful keeping that style guide as consistent as possible.
Okay. A wild pidge appeared, asks, is Alora's Altaian energy similar to Hagar's magic in some way?
In some way. Next question.
Either way, it's powerful magic, right?
Powerful stuff. We will explore this topic.
Okay, a large group of fans have been theorizing that Keith is part Galran because he's able to use his own handprint to close the bay doors in the hangar on Balmera. Also, Zarkon says he fights like a Galra soldier, and he was the first to sense Blue Lion, which is not his lion, and he sensed where Red Lion was after he focused on the Galra ship. Keith definitely has a past worth exploring here, doesn't he?
Keith and all the paladins, I think, have pasts worth exploring, and they will be explored. You know, fans and their theories. These people.
Just so you know, earlier today I speculated that Keith is half Altaian mouse.
Oh, yeah. I like this theory. Yeah.
When Shiro first saw the Galra battlecruiser on Kerberos, his first words were, "It can't be." As if he had recognized it from something. It can't be what?
I think that was just, it can't be aliens.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. I thought it was something very specific.
Nope.
Sorry. But maybe.
Jared C. says, I got an issue number one poster with issue number two from the best comic shop I'm fortunate to live by, Arcane Comics. What's your go-to comic shop?
I like a comic shop in Ventura, California, called Hypno Comics, which we will be doing a signing at in a few weeks. So I will keep the fans alerted to on my Twitter page.
Woo.
And Mitch?
I'm a huge frequenter of Meltdown Comics in Hollywood. I've been going there for years and years. I used to go every Wednesday for comic book day, and like that was like a big deal for me. Love those guys there. They have great recommendations, too. And as long as we're giving shout-outs, I just want to say hi to my mom, because I know she's going to listen to this, and it'll mean a lot to her.
Hi, Mom. We also wanted to find out from you guys, will you guys be in New York Comic Con to sign some more comics, like issue number 3 at the Lion Forge Comics booth?
Absolutely. We will be there.
We will.
Woo! Voltron takes Gotham. We're ready to get there and sign some comic books.
That is awesome. And a lot of the fans are going to be clamoring to get to that Lion Forge Comics booth to get some signed copies from you guys.
Come on out. We're going to be doing some wrist exercises all this month to be prepared for all the signing we're going to do.
I know we saw you guys on the West Coast at San Diego Comic-Con, and now it's time for the East Coasters to get a little bit of that love.
I love it. Can't wait.
Will you have any of those mouse stickers again?
Oh, I don't know. We'll have to look and see if we have more mouse stickers. I think there are some around.
I think there are. I'll do my best to get some.
Those were pretty cool.
We'll talk to Lauren. She's kind of on the mouse sticker vault.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask a quick question about the Rise of Voltron episode. In that episode, when they recover the lions, they have to use the castle's wormhole generator to get back to Eris. But Blue Lion seems to be able to get back to Eris on its own. Is there anything behind that, or is that just a, well, we needed to get the lion there kind of a thing?
The idea is that, the lions were scattered throughout, and that when one of them was activated, that it would be able to go back and carry them back to the castle. So it was kind of like an emergency, transfer back, okay, after being asleep for 10,000 years.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
Yeah.
We're going to get more into how that all works, too, in the next drop. There'll be a lot of stuff around about wormholes.
Cool. Bring on the worms.
Okay, and I actually do have one more question from the fans. At Nutsnake asks, do you guys get inspiration from other mecha shows? They spotted the Macross cameos in episode 1.
I would say that our art team is definitely inspired by all of those shows, and they are to thank or blame for any cameos rendered therein. They're super into all of that stuff. Our vehicle designer, Christine Bion, is always having Mitch put together models for her so that she can use them as reference.
She buys Gundam models. And then she doesn't like putting them together. I like putting together models, but I don't like keeping them. So it's a really good, it's a symbiotic relationship. Yeah,
it works out for everyone.
All right. On a previous podcast, we had had World Events Productions president Bob Koppler on.
Right.
He had said that when you guys were first coming up with the whole universe, the whole show, everything, that you asked some very poignant questions about Voltron. Like, what is the number five? Why are there five lions? Why are they all the different colors that they are and stuff like that? Did you guys actually ask those questions?
That sounds plausible. I don't really remember that, but sure.
What I'm trying to get at is, do you go all the way back to the beginning with like Toei Animation, and do you talk to some of the people who were actually involved in creating Beast King Go Lion, or do you accept some things for the way they are?
We accept most things for the way they are. I mean, I think that, you know, there have been so many hands on the Voltron franchise throughout the years that, you know, it's kind of tough to say why one thing is the way it is, or, you know. So most things we just kind of take them and run with them and hopefully don't mess them up too much. But a lot of it we just kind of, you know, this is the way it is, and now this is the way it is on our show.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so I hope as long as you guys like it, that's all that matters to us.
Truly.
Well, I can tell you this show is very, very popular on Netflix, and it's very popular with the listeners of this podcast as well. So you're doing something right, because everybody seems to like these characters, this world, this story, everything.
Well, we love them too, and that means a lot. And we really appreciate everybody that listens to this podcast, and you guys. It's really, really a lot of fun to interact with Voltron fans. They are great.
Yep, indeed.
So I know you guys are busy with season two, and we know you don't have a whole heck of a lot of time to spend with us here. So we want to thank you for joining us on Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Anytime. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having us on here.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. It's been a treat.
All right. Good talking with you guys.
Let's go, Voltron fans. This is your Voltron Fan Spotlight. Guess what, Greg?
What's that, Mark?
We have a new segment on the show.
I've heard rumors. What? Tell me more about it.
Well, it seems to be that there's a very popular thing going around with the fans right now called Voltron voice meme. Have you heard of it?
I have no clue what a voice meme is, so please clue me in.
Okay, well, people go out on places like SoundCloud and they'll record themselves answering questions that come from a Voltron voice meme. Questions that could be like your name and URL, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into Voltron? Had you ever seen any of the earlier shows before watching Legendary Defender? What's your favorite character? What are your favorite ships, if any? What are you hoping to see in future seasons? What's your favorite episode? Which lion would you pilot? And could you say things like Shiro, Keith, Lance, Pidge, Hunk, Allura, Karan, Zarkon, Kerberos, Galra, Aris, Altea, Balmera, Quintessence?
Oh, so this is kind of like when a game show starts and, you know, Pat Sajak says, okay, here are our contestants, and then they say something about themselves. This is basically kind of a little bit more of a formalized way of doing that.
Right.
Okay, cool.
I started taking a look at all the Voltron voice memes that are out there, and I happened to notice one from Rebecca Blackwell Reed, who's from the south of England.
Cool.
So we got her permission to play the Voltron voice meme that she had recorded.
Great, let's hear it.
So this is something that's going to be a regular segment on the show, and I just want everybody to know, if you're interested in doing a Voltron voice meme, you might get yours on our show. Of course, we'll ask you your permission to play it on our show first, but I want you to know that this is going to be a regular segment on our show because we want to get to know the fans better too.
Absolutely. I mean, this show is really of the fans, by the fans, for the fans. And this sounds like a great way to increase our interaction with other fans.
Right. Rebecca recorded hers on Vocaroo.com, and she posted it on her Twitter account, at SpaceBratKeith.
Okay.
I'm going to play Rebecca's recording for you. You ready?
Yep.
Hi. So I thought I'd give the Voltron voice meme a go. I've just seen it going around and thought I'd have a go at it. So first off, name and URL. My name is Rebecca. My URL is RB Illustration. Tell us a little about yourself. I'm 25. I live in the south of England. I like to draw, like to write. I like to eat. I work retail, which is joyous. How did I get into Voltron? Oh, this is a bad one. The first ever thing that I saw of Voltron was back in July. I was just browsing Twitter and there was a picture of this naked guy, and it was Shearer. And it was a really nice fan art, and I can't remember the name of the artist because I haven't seen it since, but I was like, oh, what is this? And I looked it up, and at first I was kind of like, oh, it's like a giant robots thing, which I'm not generally into things with giant robots, and I hadn't heard of the original Voltron. It's a bit before my time, so I wasn't gonna have a look. And then I saw some of my friends talking about it on Facebook, and I was like, okay, fine, I'll give it a go. And then from the first episode, I was hooked. So yeah, that's how it went. Have you ever seen any of the earlier shows before watching Legendary Defender? I have not, but I know there's quite a few versions, and I have had a quick look at some like screenshots from the 80s original, and I have to say 80s Lance is very attractive. I think I might have to have a look, but no, I haven't actually watched any of it. Favourite character? Shiro. I think that much is obvious. But yeah, Keith is a close second. I love Shiro. Need to protect Shiro. But Keith, yes, I really like Keith as well. I relate to Keith a lot. I'm going to be cosplaying Keith soon. And I got Keith in a personality test that I did, because I'm just that antisocial and awkward as well. So I relate quite a lot to Keith. What are your ships, if any? Generally, I'm not a huge fan of shipping. The fanfic that I'm writing, there aren't really any ships, it's mostly platonic. I kind of prefer to explore the platonic potential for relationships between the characters, but I have to say, I do have a weakness for Sheath. I do think that Shiro and Keith have a connection. Yeah, I think they're very, very cute together, and yeah. It's weird, because I like all of the characters platonically, but I also do like that ship, so I don't know. Clance is quite sweet as well. What are you hoping to see in future seasons? I want to see more about Keith's background. Like, what was he doing in the desert for a year? What was he actually doing? More of Shiro's backstory, because obviously we saw a hint of his, like, PTSD and that kind of thing. And maybe his and Keith's relationship before Kerberos. That would be nice to see. Yeah, just more character development, really, because I'm just interested to see what went on before Series 1. Favourite episode? Probably the one where I think Sendak is, like, haunting the ship, if that makes sense, where they all kind of have to work together, where Lance nearly gets flung out the airlock, and Pidge and Hunk are flying around in zero gravity, and we get to see, obviously, a hint of Shiro's background. Also, that episode inspired a drawing for me, so that's quite important. But I did also like, in the earliest episodes where they had to work out how to form Voltron, that was quite funny. Which lion would you pilot? I'd probably pilot the blue lion, because it's the friendliest. Even though I got Keith in the personality test, I don't think I would have the kind of personality needed to pilot the red lion. Okay, last thing. Say, Shiro, Keith, Lance, Pidge, Pidge, Hunk, Allura, Koran, Zarkon, Kerberos, Golra, Aris, Altea, Balmera, and Quintessence. Yay! I hope I did that okay. Please do it if you feel like doing it. Bye!
Rebecca, wow. That was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew nothing about this stuff, as I mentioned before we played this, and it's neat. I mean, I sort of in the back of my mind thought, wouldn't it be cool if we could do fan spotlights, but I could never quite wrap my brain around how. And this is a great way to just let people tell us about themselves.
And the cool thing is that the fans started doing this themselves. We didn't even ask them to do this. It was already happening.
That's great. I don't know how you got all clued into this, Mark, but this is really neat. I look forward to hearing more from more people.
It just comes from going out there on social media and seeing what the fans are talking about, seeing what they're posting and everything and stuff like that. And, you know, but just pay attention to the fans and they'll tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, I've been, you know, more active. I mean, I started Twitter, you know, as I became a co-host of the podcast. So I get out and look around a little bit, but I guess not enough. So, but I'm thrilled to have heard from Rebecca here. It's fun to hear from a fan who, you know, was introduced to Voltron through this series and actually introduced to this series through an interesting means. And yeah, I mean, this is cool. So I love hearing this very different perspective. It's great. It's awesome.
Right.
So Rebecca, thanks for letting us play this.
Yeah. And it was interesting to hear her say that she doesn't really get into the shipping. She likes to keep things platonic. And believe it or not, there's a lot of people out there that are like that, and they don't really, you know, see the relationships as a big part of the story. They just want to get into the story more.
That's actually how I am. In fact, I'm so tuned out of shipping, and I'm not discounting shippers at all. You know, we all like what we like, and that's what's great about, you know, about being fans. We're all one big happy fan family, aspects we like or don't like quite so much. But when you said shipping before you introduced Rebecca on here, I was thinking, what, favorite spaceships? And I'm thinking, well, the Galra battle cruiser in the first episode was pretty cool, but you know.
Yeah, well, if we go back to our Star Wars fandom days, you know, when we were thinking about X-Wing fighters, TIE fighters, and Death Stars, you know, and stuff like that, those were a few of our favorite ships.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Right? And, of course, the USS Enterprise, right?
Oh, yes, in all of her forms, yes.
And, of course, I always liked the Cylon Raiders and the Colonial Vipers from Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah, definitely.
I never thought about, you know, putting together relationships, you know, like some of the other shows that we had liked, you know, and saying that I wish there was more of that relationship that was, you know, exposed in the show.
Yeah, I'm more of a sit back and enjoy kind of a person rather than, you know, I don't really read between the lines maybe as much as maybe I should. But, you know, when I watch these shows, I just take them as they are and think, wow, what a fun show. And then, you know, I can't wait for the next one. But I don't really pick up on the cues. Maybe I'm socially awkward. Oh, I know I kind of am. But it's not my cup of tea. But I'm glad that it is other people's cups of tea. You know, I mean, we all like different things. And, you know, we got five diverse lions, five diverse pilots, you know, so we got diverse fans. And that's great.
And we've got fans that do drawing, they do fan fiction, they do cosplay, they do all these kind of cool creative things that I couldn't even possibly imagine doing sometimes.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I was at Columbus Toy Show. I happened to run into Mark Oliver, a Voltron fan that we all know and love. And I also saw another gentleman in line, and I unfortunately didn't get a chance to speak with him. We were too far apart in the line. But he was also proudly wearing a Voltron T-shirt, and it was really cool. So they're out there in all shapes, sizes, and ages, and genders, and everything. And this is such a cool thing. I am so looking forward to New York Comic Con next month, my first major convention of this kind, and just seeing fandom in a whole new light. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, so we will be, you know, featuring a fan spotlight, and you will hear more Voltron voice memes from some other fans.
Very cool.
Yeah, so however you want to put it together, you can use SoundCloud, you can use Vocaroo like Rebecca did, and there's a ton of different tools out there to record your voice and everything and then share it with everybody either on Twitter or Facebook or however you like. And then what we'll do is we'll just start, you know, scouring the galaxy.
All right.
And looking for fans that have, you know, submitted, you know, their Voltron voice memes. If you want to let us know that you did your Voltron voice meme, then, you know, make sure you include us at Let's Voltron on Twitter, or let us know on Facebook, you know, Let's Voltron Podcast on Facebook, or you can just send us an email or however you want to do it, letsvoltronpodcast@gmail.com. So let us know, and you may be featured in the fan spotlight on a future podcast.
Sounds like fun.
So that's going to do it for us this week, We want to thank our special guests, Tim Hedrick and Mitch Iverson, for joining us once again.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know that the fans were really looking forward to hearing more about the story from the writers. And I know, you know, some of the answers that we got from Mitch and Tim were very short, but at least they let you know, yes, we will go into, you know, more things about some of the things that you guys are very interested in, you know, with Voltron Legendary Defender. So at least you know you're going to get some of those backstories as we continue on with the show.
Yeah, and it's great that they've been so open to talking with us. I know that, you know, they've got to speak very carefully not to spoil anything, but the fact that they're willing to come on and chat with us, you know, answering questions from the fans is great. And it's wonderful to have this kind of access. And I'm so grateful that they come on and talk with us.
And this is in the middle of while they're working on season two, because it's coming out in late 2016.
Right.
And at the same time, they have another, you know, convention coming up, New York Comic Con, that they'll be attending.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're very busy people, and they, you know, they're trying to give us our show that we love, you know.
Yep. And again, makes it all the more special that they're willing to come out here with us and answer fan questions. I just think that that's something that you don't get from a lot of other shows that you might enjoy watching. So this is a very unique and fun thing, and I'm just thrilled to be a small part of it.
Yes, we want to thank DreamWorks Animation for setting this up for us, and we want to thank Tim and Mitch and everybody that works on the show, and hopefully we'll be able to get some more, you know, of the cast and crew of Voltron Legendary Defender on our show in the near future.
Yep.
So we'll see you all next time on
Let's Voltron.